All right, welcome everybody to the next edition of the Manat Digital Podcast. I'm Jake Carlson. I'm a senior manager on the Manat Digital team, also the investment manager on our Manat Venture Fund, which is our firm's corporate venture capital fund. And we're excited to be joined by my co-host, Sarah Chambliss, who's a partner with Manat, as well as two of our friends and our favorite fund managers, Jesse Draper with Halogen Ventures, and Shameen Walsh with BAM Ventures. So we're going to talk today a little bit about venture capital, the LA market, and what we're seeing across the industry and looking forward into 2019. So just to kind of kick off, I'd love for you guys to kind of introduce yourselves, give a little quick background, and talk a little bit about the funds that you represent.
Cool. Alrighty, well, this is Shameen here. I'm a managing director with BAM Ventures. So we are three partners. It's myself, Rich Jen, and Brian Lee. Brian has been incredibly successful as an entrepreneur. He co-founded LegalZoom, ShoeDazzle, and The Honest Company, and that really plays into our fund strategy as early stage consumer investors. So we like to be some of the earliest consumer investors investing in the next iconic brands, and I'd say about 60% of our portfolio is LA based, but we are geographically agnostic. So yeah, that's what we've been doing, and we just closed our second fund, $20 million fund, so we're excited to deploy and keep it going.
Absolutely, congrats. Jesse?
I'm Jesse Draper. I'm so excited to be here, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I run Halogen Ventures. We do early stage female founded consumer tech. We are investing all across the country, from California to New York, and we have some companies in Chicago, Atlanta, Seattle as well. And I'm a big fan of Manat, big fan of BAM. So this is just, I'm starstruck today. And I believe that legally I have to disclose that Manat is an investor as well, don't I?
Sure.
I mean, you're...
We are. We're LPs. Actually, yeah. We're LPs in both funds.
Okay, so good.
Then now I feel better. I will also disclose. This is why I need Jesse's professional experience in this, because I could have left with a big lawsuit on my hands.
Oh, like, you got a lawyer in the room.
In the lawyer's office.
None of this is legal advice. Disclosures. Yeah, but why don't we go ahead and dive in? And this is Sarah, by the way. So you're both super heavy into consumer and have a real focus on LA. I'm curious as to the new trends you're seeing here in Los Angeles, and also whether you think LA is developing its own identity in the VC universe, how you're seeing that evolve.
I love consumer. I come from media. I ran a talk show for 8 years. It was like my little entrepreneurial journey that just like I couldn't let go of. I was like, they say like you need to know when to shut it down. Like I probably should have known, but I just kept going. I think consumer for me, I love it because we can add expertise because we come from media and are able to help give, media, I look at it as simply a vessel for which to sell things through. So why not be in Los Angeles? So I think that also LA is becoming such a great hub. We have everything from Snapchat to Google to Amazon to Facebook, and it's just booming. You know, you look at the growth that's happened since 6 years ago, and it's really incredible. We have such great companies here, and we have Honest, we have Riot Games. I mean, really very large consumer companies. So it's a great, it's a great hub of consumer.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. And I think consumer is really in the DNA of LA. I think if you even look at us historically, it takes like two things to build a great business. Like, you need great entrepreneurs and you need some kind of access to capital. And historically, we haven't really had that. And so you'll see a lot of the original success stories in LA have been self-financed, like a LegalZoom or, a Price Grabber or Shopzilla. Like, these are businesses that had to monetize very early on. And so I feel like that lends itself to the consumer and e-com ecosystem, because those are also businesses that, you know, have the opportunity to monetize very early on. And then, you know, supporting what Jesse said, I mean, we have so much diversity here, and we have, you know, access to creative talent. And so I think that blend all together, you know, between this kind of true entrepreneur mindset where, you know, you've needed to bootstrap for a very long time, and the access to creative talent and the diversity of the consumer base just makes it a great opportunity for consumers. You know, speaking of trends, I mean, very obvious one. I think we've seen like cannabis explode here. Mm-hmm. I think even a few years ago, you know, you'd see funds wouldn't even touch cannabis, and now I see actual fund strategies developed around cannabis, or funds like emerging around cannabis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. We actually have one investment in a CBD company called Sagely Naturals, mm-hmm. where we're, you know, we felt more comfortable around the CBD regulatory landscape.
Can I just say, so many people on my Christmas list are getting Sagely this year.
Oh my God, that makes me so happy.
I think I actually have some boxes of Sagely in my office right now.
Oh, that is great. Hashtag sponsored.
We looked at that deal a while ago, and I remember thinking, God, if I was going to invest in this space, that is exactly what we would do and feel more comfortable. And I think I could probably get my LPs around it.
Yeah.
But still, because it's not regulated at a federal level, it doesn't make sense for us. But it is a trend, and I'm like calling in those companies now.
Yeah.
And so you do see people just sort of scratching the surface a little, myself included.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's crazy because they have mainstream distribution now through like mainstream retailers.
Yeah.
But to your point, it still is a gray area. So it'll be interesting to see how all of that shakes out, but yeah, that's definitely an area I feel like has emerged and is continuing to emerge.
Absolutely.
Are there any competitive advantages that you guys find being based in LA in terms of deal sourcing and you know, finding new interesting companies to invest in, especially in the LA market?
I think LA is a huge advantage, not only because of what I mentioned before, but media exposure, but also because it's a major city. Many people come through LA. So even deal flow, you know, nationally, everyone sort of has an excuse to come to LA. So that's been really positive for us as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you always have an advantage wherever you're based. Mm-hmm. I mean, just by virtue of the fact that we're both based here, we have strong networks here. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brian's built three large businesses here. So, you know, any person that kind of spins off and starts their own next thing is great. And then I think valuations here are really reasonable, so relative to like the overall market or other markets, and so especially for consumer businesses, I think there are a lot of advantages there.
Well, and we also have two major universities, and I think that feeds everything. You know, we have UCLA, we have USC, and they both have great tech ecosystems and accelerators, and I think that, you know, I always say like education is where it all begins, you know, and I think that is like you need creative minds to start these amazing innovative companies. And that feeds everything, the talent, the everything
right.
is fed by the universities.
Right. So is there any like particular industry or model that works best for you guys in terms of when you're evaluating companies that are coming through?
I'm going to sit here and pretend that there's this like really special way that I go through and vet companies, and it's a true art. But then some days it really feels like the Wild West. You know, you're coming in, you're like, I have this whole strategy worked out, but and they don't fit in my box, but I need them to fit in my box. Like this company, something's going to happen here, you know? And so I think you always need to look outside of the box and think there will be exceptions. But for us personally, you know, we're looking for incredible teams who are disrupting some kind of element of the consumer market. We saw six tampon companies in 1 month, and to me that was not a unique space, so I did not want to invest in a tampon company. And then we met Lauren Schulte from Flex, and she created the menstrual disc. I'm sure you guys are really excited to talk about this on your podcast. But
let's do it.
It's fantastic. She created a menstrual disc, which is an alternate tampon device. She owns the technology and the IP, where actually tampons are monopolized. They're a distributor. There's a monopoly on tampons in Slovenia. They monopolized the entire manufacturing of tampons everywhere. So every tampon company is manufactured there. And so Lauren's doing something completely different, going after a multi-billion dollar market, but also she's, you know, stands out in the space. So to me, that's one of the things that I look for.
Interesting. How important, because you mentioned monetization, Shamin, like, and I do think that in LA, there seems to be much more of an emphasis on monetization, on getting to revenue. Like, how important is that for you guys when you're looking at companies?
For us, it's pretty, I mean, so I think it depends on the category, right? If it's a consumable, you know, you're not waiting around for them to create network effects, right? They should be able to monetize early on. Mm-hmm. You know, with consumer tech platforms, or, you know, if it's a social platform or they are creating network effects, then they have a totally different model. I think they either need to demonstrate that they can monetize or have a clear vision towards monetization that seems reasonable and attainable for it to kind of like pass our test.
Yeah, I think monetization strategy is definitely something important that we take into account. You know, I love to see $1 million in revenue. I love to see traction of some sort. But when you're in early stage investing, you know, you do sometimes see pre-revenue companies, and you understand that if it's a hardware company especially, you understand why they have to raise money before they can focus on the monetization strategy. But I would like to know that there is one and that they do plan on making money. But consumer, it's pretty clear how they're going to be making money.
We were talking about founding teams and finding really interesting entrepreneurs. Talk a little bit about, especially at the early stage, right? That's such a key process in terms of making a bet on a company. What are you looking for in your founding teams? And Jesse, especially with you and you're female focused, how are you guys approaching these entrepreneurial teams when you're looking at them?
I mean, we have 47 companies now. And so for me, it really has become, there is an element of pattern recognition. I prefer to have co-founders. I love three founders, you know, complementary skill sets. There are some elements of team that don't work. I like to know that someone's always calling the shots, and co-CEOs, I just want to make sure it's like, okay, well, who's going to be the deal breaker? And you do need one of those. But teams are really, really important, and I do occasionally invest in a founder who's a sole founder, but I need to know that they have a really great support team, because co-founders, someone always falls off, whether they're pushed out or, you know, Jen Hyman from Rent the Runway is very open about the fact that she and Jenny Fleiss right from the beginning said, okay, Jen Hyman's going to do 80% of the work and Jenny's going to do 20, and they do different parts of the business. And I think you just need some clarity about what that is from the beginning. So I think, teams are so, so important. And yeah, I'd say co-founders, complementary skill sets, many things.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, we are investing at a stage where you don't have a ton of data points or historical financials or any of that. So, you know, it's not only the cliche of saying we invest in great teams and great founders, but also just really going deeply into their skill set. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not just like, oh, we're a CEO and COO and CMO, but, you know, going granular, like, what does that mean as a CMO? Are you a good technical marketer? Are you a good brand marketer? Are you good at, you know, are you more of a creative director? And it's really that kind of granular level of analysis that ends up making a difference, because you really need to be the right people for that particular business. You know, if your business is going to rely on like performance marketing and, you know, growth hacking, like you could be an amazing creative director, but like you weren't the right fit, even if you have like a great pedigree. So we really just dig into not just, you know, the resume qualities, but like who they were really, what they were responsible for doing, like what they're good at, like how they make decisions together, We also just look for founders who have authentic passion for what they're doing. And also, you know, people don't talk about this as much, but also for things that we have an authentic passion for, because, you know, we really like to be value add to our founders, and it's hard to be value add for something that you don't care about, right? Mm-hmm. So it has to be not just that we're excited about the founder, but also, you know, we consider ourselves like ambassadors and extensions of like what they're building. So there are times where like where we've met wonderful founders, but like maybe, you know, there was no really internal champion for whatever that particular business was, and for that reason we passed, because we know like we only have so much bandwidth and it needs to be something that like we are also excited about.
Mm-hmm. How about first-time founders? Do you guys invest in first-time founders? And if so, what kind of background do they need to have in order for that, for you to believe in that?
Yeah, I've definitely invested in first-time founders, and for me, I mean, I hope they have a very unique idea in order to get across the finish line with us. I think they definitely, it needs to be something very disruptive and innovative, but also like that they've led teams before, some sort of team, that they work well in groups, that they, you know, are insanely optimistic and like can't see the word no. I mean, they really, you know, I love the founders, and I probably shouldn't say this too much, but I love it when they keep coming back to me. Some investors hate that. Like, I'll say no 3 or 4 times and be like, no, because of this, no, because of this. And they'll like be like, we solved that problem, and so we want to meet with you again. And I'm like, okay. And I have invested in founders like that. You want them to just not, just let no wash over them. And then I love what Shamin said about, you know, checking into their background, because yeah, first time founders, even sometimes second time founders, it's like you can only do so much research for an early stage company. Like, you can do a light background check to make sure that they haven't been to prison, but I've even seen some really amazing companies come out of former inmates. So I mean, I don't know what it's difficult to tell, and I think you really do need to get to know them. I like to throw people into uncomfortable situations. I'll bring them to events and see that they make the most of every opportunity. I've thrown, I remember I threw Greta and Lauren. I know you guys work with Blue Fever a little bit, and they, when I was thinking about investing, they were so young, and I was like, I don't know, like, let's just sort of like see how they, you know, deal with the community. And I threw Greta onto this data science panel because I was like, it's 3 men. It's like the data scientists from Full Screen, from Hulu, and from YouTube. And I know you're not a data scientist, but it's like in media, and I just want a female on the panel, and like, you'll be great. And I threw her on, and she was amazing. Like, she just, I mean, you would have thought she was a data scientist, and she was disrupting this similar industry, but she really... they both make the most of every opportunity, and I think that's like, it doesn't matter what room they're in, they meet everyone they can, and I think that's, you know, I want to see founders that will get out there like that.
Yeah, I mean, echo everything Jesse said. I think so we definitely do invest in first-time founders. You know, we really like founders who have an ability to attract talent. You know, that's how they kind of buttress their own, you know, knowledge gaps, and that's like much easier said than done. You like, sometimes you look at some people and you think they say the same idea that like other people have said, but somehow like you've attracted people to the like the story or the dream that you're gonna be the one to execute on it. And some people just have that like contagious quality to attract people to them and to like really emerge as leaders. So that's something we really look for with first-time founders. And then if you're a first-time founder, as long as you're nimble and you're resilient, you know, we understand that there are like a lot of mistakes that happen, but if you can fail quickly and efficiently and be like, tried this, you know, it didn't cost a lot, we're moving on to this. Like, if you can just like test efficiently, then that's what we really look for, like people who are like nimble and crafty versus, you know, needing to, it's funny, like repeat founders don't necessarily have a hit every single time.
Right.
So, you know, it's like really looking at that person in the context of that particular business.
Mm-hmm. So Speaking of light background checks and prison time.
I mean, we are in a law office, so I'm a little on edge, I'll be honest.
What other, you know, methods do you guys use to vet deals, and what are the key factors that you take into account aside from the founding team? What other things are you looking for?
I mean, for us, you know, I think we mentioned most of them, but, you know, a really disruptive, unique product, killer team, market size is really important to us, billion-dollar markets. I want to know that they can grow this and that the team sees how big this can get. There have been many times where I have a meeting with a founder and I realize I see how big the idea can get. I will sit there and I'll be like, oh my God, and then you could do this, and you could do this, and you could do this. And then I sort of sit back and realize, okay, I could build this, but what I want to know that they're going to take it there. And you realize you're making an investment into a CEO who needs to be able to take it to the billion-dollar space. And so hopefully they can build it and see how big it is. So I think those are some other things that we look for. And then obviously monetization strategy, go-to-market strategy, those are all key too.
Yeah, and Jesse alluded to this earlier, you know, in her tampon example.
You're welcome.
Yeah, looking for businesses that are kind of covering some kind of white space. So overlooked markets are interesting for us. You know, kind of like there are a lot of huge markets out there that seem overlooked. You know, first-time founder example, we invested in a company called Pretty Litter, and they're a kitty litter company. And, you know, people have just as many cats as dogs, but everyone, and, you know, when Daniel pitched us, he's like, how many dog startups have you seen out there? And we're like, a ton. He's like, how many cat startups have you seen out there? And we're like, none. You have sold us. And he solves a real pain point. It's subscription, which we love. Anytime you can evoke an emotional response out of a consumer, that's something we really love. And then if you can do it on a recurring basis, that's even better. So, you know, there are all of these like non-sexy areas that have a lot of potential.
I mean, cats are pretty sexy though.
Yeah.
My cat is very sexy. Yeah. Show you some pictures. You guys won't be able to see them.
Don't diss the cat.
That's true. I grew up with two cats, and so did Rich, which was funny because whenever we had meetings, they would talk about, you know, the super fans of like the cat person and then direct it towards me. And I was like, this is funny because I actually did have two Persian cats growing up. But Rich also grew up with two cats, so go figure.
I had a three-legged cat, and it was the coolest cat. It used to have four legs. It had to have one removed, and because it was like actually really sad, one day it came back from the vet, and we thought it was just like a little bit of its paw, but then it became the coolest cat. So it came back with three legs, and it was like in a day, he was like climbing windows and stuff.
Oh my God.
Like, this is the coolest thing ever.
See, my cat has four legs and cannot jump to save his life.
Animals are so resilient.
They are, especially cats.
Yeah.
So for those just joining us, welcome back to the Nat Digital Cat Podcast. We're having a blast.
Sponsored by Meow Mix.
Well, just thinking through kind of final thoughts here on the industry, you know, looking forward to 2019. And this can be from your perspective or from, you know, kind of the venture capital perspective broadly, but are you seeing any trends or shifts in the market or from an investor's perspective on what people are looking at for 2019? You know, thinking, you know, from a macro standpoint, you know, we've seen kind of valuations go up from early stage deals. We've seen kind of Series A type investments shifted to seed into kind of pre-seed. Anything like that or other insights that you guys have that you're interested in exploring for 2019? It's a broad question.
I think trends, I mean, not necessarily, I mean, yes, there's some valuation discrepancies now, but it's all still moving, so I don't want to like exactly focus on that, but just as far as consumer, you know, traditional retail's shutting down, direct to consumer brands are becoming much more valuable. That's something interesting to me. I'm really looking to dig into the future of work and just, I want to steamroll childcare. I think that's just a small fraction of the future of work. But that, I think there's so much change, like care.com was only scratching the surface. And it's a multi-billion dollar industry, many more than $53 billion went into daycare last year in the United States, and that's just one element of it. And so I look forward to seeing how childcare and education changes in the future. And then we're also looking for companies that help government inefficiencies and make the government more efficient.
Awesome. Please.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing two trends in terms of, you know, VC and liquidity landscapes just in the immediate future. I think you're seeing more of the mega funds that are kind of extending the lives of companies while they continue to stay private for longer. Mm-hmm. And then you're also seeing a lot of this traditional acquisitive behavior. So like companies are having earlier liquidity options. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see things in both directions where you're extending out the liquidity life cycle in one direction and you're shortening it in the other. We've been looking a lot more at CPG, and there's been a rise in CPG and food and beverage, and that's a category that, you know, in the immediate future is looking interesting. I mean, I think longer term, you know, right now we're seeing brands winning in certain categories because traditional retailers or, you know, corporate entities aren't keeping up. But I think, you know, you look at especially the most advanced guys like a Walmart or a Target that are catching up really quickly. And so, you know, the strategies that emerging brands are using today to win are probably going to end up needing to be the baseline and then some mm-hmm. to compete down the line, because I do think, you know, in certain categories the giants will catch up. So it'll be interesting to see how the consumer landscape evolves and like what continues to be the new unique differentiators down the line.
And a lot of those corporations now, too, are becoming strategic investors earlier and earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. I have, like, J&J reaching out and wanting to meet. And, you know, I think it's really interesting now to be in early stage consumer because everyone's looking at us.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. Really good conversation. And, you know, I think we're all looking forward to 2019 and the opportunities ahead here. We look forward to continuing to work together, and hopefully we can come back and do this again. We can have updates on all the new exciting stuff that you guys are going up to in the meantime.
Awesome.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
This was great.
Easy breezy.